Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 109. We're Leviticus chapters 5, 6, and 7. Hey, if you've done the reading, we're about to dive in. If you have not done the reading, pause the audio, pause the video, go do the reading. We just got Leviticus chapters 5, 6, and 7. I would say this, that if you're a Christian, then you believe in the priesthood of all believers, that we're all priests. And we've got an owner's manual designed for priests in the ancient world. And although every single thing doesn't translate into our world, we do believe that we're priests. I believe that I'm a priest. I believe that every Christian is a priest. We are mediators, that we have a job of mediating the relationship between humans and God. And in addition to mediation, we steward these things called temples. And so we are priests. And so Leviticus may be a hard book to get through, but I encourage you to like lean in, try to understand as much as possible, because in the same way that the priests are doing their job every single day in a physical tabernacle, you and I are doing our job every single day in the tabernacle of our souls and spirits and minds and bodies. And so there are going to be things that we see in the book of Leviticus that we go, oh, that's why I should pray every day. Okay, that's why I should read the Bible every day. Okay, I'm stewarding this thing called a temple, and there aren't many temples in our modern world. So it's hard to draw a bridge. It's hard to know how to do this because I don't know what that is. And so Leviticus is trying to help us with that so that we can glean from that and know how to apply it to this. Okay, so Leviticus 5 through 7. Remember how yesterday I said, hey, we got four types of sacrifice. Technically, it was 3.5. So today we're going to look at all five forms of sacrifice, including from Leviticus chapter 1 through 4, and now 5 through 7. We're going to get five offerings, okay? Five kinds of offerings in the book of Leviticus, okay? So let's recap. We're going to get the whole burnt offering, which we talked about yesterday, and a grain offering, which we talked about yesterday. And we're going to get a peace offering, which we talked about yesterday. This is why I said we covered 3.5, is because the next offering is called a sin offering. And there's unintentional sin and intentional sin, okay? So the fourth offering that we get is a sin offering. And the last offering that we get is called a guilt offering, okay? So five offerings, a whole burnt offering, a grain offering, a peace offering, a sin offering, of which there are two kinds, and then a guilt offering. So today, we're just going to tackle the last two there, okay? Sin offerings and guilt offerings. Okay, I really, really enjoy Leviticus chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, because in so many ways, the priests function like pastors. So I love this. I'm going to start reading verse 5 of Leviticus chapter 6. If someone has sworn falsely, he shall restore it in full, what he took by robbery or what he got by oppression or the deposit that was committed to him or the lost thing that he found or anything which he has sworn falsely, he shall restore it in full. Okay, so the person who has done something wrong has to restore that which was broken or stolen or destroyed. He has to restore it in full and shall add a fifth to it, give it to him to whom it belongs on the day he realizes his guilt. And he shall bring to the priest as his compensation to the Lord a ram without blemish of the flock or its equivalent for a guilt offering. So it says, you paid your brother back, okay, but you owe the Lord because you don't just sin against your brother, you sin against the Lord. And the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord, and he shall be forgiven for any of the things that one may do and thereby become guilty. All right, so
I kind of want to walk through this three-step process because I think that this is, I genuinely find this beautiful. Verses 1-7 lay out six sinful actions as a person can make against his neighbor. Okay, deceiving their neighbor with something left in their care, lying about lost property, robbery, cheating their neighbor, swearing falsely, oppression. To make this sin right, the sinner has to do three things. Restore what he took in full, add a fifth to it, and bring an unblemished ram or its equivalent to make a guilt offering. Then, keyword here, then the priest shall make atonement for him. The priest is going to make atonement if you haven't gotten things right with your brother or your sister. So you can't just bring a ram to the temple. And there's a lot of people, I think, who try to get right with God, but they don't want to try to get right with people. Or the other way around. They want to just, they're trapped in a world of justice that has removed holiness or godliness from it. So they think that as long as they treat their neighbor right, it doesn't matter if they've sinned against God. And God says, well, actually, like in a world, and I'm not that world, not the ancient world, but in our world that is so polarized. I mean, you've got people who lean a little bit more left, who are adamant that, you know, social justice is the end all be all. And then you've got people who lean maybe more conservative, who would say, no, as long as people are good with God, that's all that matters. And here you have a book like Leviticus that's saying, who said that one or the other of these two was sufficient or the goal? Actually, you need to make it right with your brother or sister. You need to make it right with God. And there's two different things that are required in order to do that. Your brother needs justice, like give him back what was lost and add a fifth to it. Awesome. Restoration. I'm going to restore what was broken, restore what was taken. And not instead. And no, God doesn't need that. God needs you to put an animal on the altar and sacrifice. I just don't know where we got off going, yeah, only this matters or only that matters, where the Bible is, I think, pretty consistently clear that both do matter. Okay. We've got the whole burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, the sin offering, and then the guilt offering. Now, of these five offerings, three of these are the way that we say, Lord, I'm sorry. Two of these are the way that we say, Lord, thank you. Okay. So the grain offering and the peace offering can be done at any time. Okay. And there is a way that we say, thank you. God, thank you. Thank you for blessing me. Thank you for sustaining me. Thank you for providing. Just thank you. The sin offering, the guilt offering, and the whole burnt offering is not designed to say thank you. Those are designed to say, I'm sorry. Like, I apologize.
Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode.
Let's get our nerdy nugget. We really need to define holiness again and again and again and again and again. By the time we get to the middle of the book, because Leviticus is a chiasm, when we get to the middle of the book, I really spend some time on like structural layout of the book, and I'll show you how it's a chiasm. For now, though, just know that we're crossing over from the beginning section of the book that's really about rituals, okay, sacrifices, and now getting into the portion of the book that's really going to deal with priests, with the priesthood, and the role of priests. So Let's define holiness just one more time. Okay, God is holy because he's not like anyone else or anything else. So anything that makes you unlike God, that is going to be something that is unclean. Okay, so God doesn't defecate. Okay, God doesn't urinate. He doesn't poop. Okay, God didn't do that. God doesn't ejaculate. Okay, so seminal fluid is going to be something that can make someone ritually unclean. God doesn't have a period. God doesn't sweat. God doesn't decay. God doesn't change. Okay, so all of those things there, as you read through some of the Levitical laws, maybe thinking to yourself, there's nothing wrong with a woman on her period or a man who ejaculates. Like, there's nothing sinful about these things. I'm going to say, of course, there's nothing sinful about those things in and of themselves. And sinful and unclean don't mean the same thing. Unclean means ritually impure, ritually unclean, not ritually cleansed in order to be around a perfect and holy God. Okay, so we just had an eclipse, okay? And I live here in Texas. And so people were outside just like, I mean, freaking out because of this eclipse. It was really, really cool. It was fully dark in the middle of the day. And then the sun moved out of the way and it got light again. It was really, really, really cool. People traveled from all over to come to Texas to watch this eclipse. And the cool thing about an eclipse is that the sun, we couldn't live without the sun, right? Like, the sun is insanely valuable. The sun provides light for plants so they can have photosynthesis. The sun provides energy. The sun provides all kinds of amazing things. Without the sun, we wouldn't have life. But although the sun is amazing, although the sun is great, although the sun is a gift that God's given us, if you look up at it during a full eclipse, you could blind yourself. Okay, so everybody had these glasses on. And what were the glasses are designed to protect your eyes from being damaged by something that really is a gift. The sun is amazing. The sun is great. Like, we need the sun. Without it, we couldn't survive here on this planet. But although it is amazing and a gift, that doesn't take away from the fact that it is dangerous inherently. And this is really at the heart of the book of Leviticus. How does a holy God who is totally other, it's not just that he doesn't sin, it's that he doesn't sleep and humans do. He doesn't do any of the things that humans have to do. He doesn't decay in any way. Not only will he never die, he's not in the process of dying right now. There's no cell in his body that is dying. I mean, he's just completely other. Holy other. W-H-O-L-L-Y. Holy other. Because God is holy other, there are going to be all these things that are innately or inherently human that God's going to say, You can't do those things in my presence, or you're going to have to take care of uncleanness. You're going to have to take care of bodily fluids. Like, you're going to have to deal with that stuff. It's not that it's sinful. It's that it makes you ritually unclean. And if you're ritually unclean, then that means you can't perform the rituals. And if you can't perform the rituals, that means I can't be in your presence because I'm holy. Okay. So again, we're in this cycle of, how do we dwell with a God who's totally holy, even though we are not? Adam and Eve didn't have this issue until they did. And when they did have this issue, they got kicked out of the garden, which was God's grace and love towards them. Because if he had kept them in the garden, his holiness would have destroyed them. But he loved them too much to do that. My nerdy nugget, okay, for the day is just simply to define holiness, to help everyone realize that holiness is something that God grants me, that God gives me, and that I make a conscious decision not just to be holy, but stay holy, okay? So me becoming ritually pure is something that I have to then say, okay, I became ritually pure through the ritual, through the ceremony of dealing with my uncleanliness, and now this is something that I have to have a radar for at all times. Here's something I really, really love about the opening that we've read earlier, okay, that talked about restoration or restitution plus add a fifth, plus offer an animal, okay, as a sacrifice. That there's in that we see a divine mixture of grace that the trespasser gets forgiveness, but it's not cheap grace. There's also justice. And we live in a world that says as long as there's justice, that's all that's necessary. And that's not true. Okay. But then sometimes we live in a world that's very like, oh, God can forgive anything. There's grace for anything. And that's true, but it's just not complete. And I think sometimes we settle for extremes instead of fighting for the complete shalom, wholeness that God actually wants us to have. He wants us to walk out in the divine mixture of grace and justice, grace and truth. Okay, that's my context clues, nerdy nuggets, and timeless truths for today. I hope day 109, Leviticus chapters 5 through 7 were helpful for you. And I hope that it's motivating you to continue your trek through the book of Leviticus. I love you. I'm so proud of you. Till next time. Peace.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.